Radio News at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Republicans began the legislative session last year with clear majorities and clear priorities. Goal number one was balance the budget. Faced with an unprecedented deficit, it was no easy task. But in the end, they did it, cutting state spending by 18% and, not surprisingly, making lots of folks unhappy. Goal number two was creating what GOP leaders called a more business-friendly environment, and they did make lots of changes affecting the private sector in terms of regulations, taxes, and tax credits. Then there was the third goal, stay focused on those first two priorities. Republican leadership vowed to keep their attention on the budget and business. But that's a task especially hard to achieve in the 400-member House, where even in a normal year, keeping everyone on track is often said to be like herding cats. Still, with some notable exceptions, many non-economic issues were put off until now. This is the year where we'll see debates over politically charged subjects, ranging from gay marriage to the Northern Pass to redistricting. And the budget isn't completely gone either, with tax revenues falling short of predictions. Today in The Exchange, a roundtable of state lawmakers is in studio to talk about their hopes for 2012. And let's hear from you, too. What should be item number one for the legislature this year? What should stay off the legislative agenda? And overall, how do you hope this year unfolds at the Statehouse in terms of policy and politics? Give us a call, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us a short email, the address exchange@nhpr.org. Well, as I said, we have a full house here in studio. Joining us is Matthew Hood, Democratic Senator from Plainfield. And Senator Hood, welcome.
Morning.
Also with us, Senator Jeb Bradley, Republican Senate Majority Leader from Wolfboro. And Senator Bradley, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Laura.
And our representatives include DJ Betancourt. He's Republican House Majority Leader from Salem. And Representative Betancourt, good to see you. Thank you for being here.
Good to be here.
And also with us, Steve Shirtliff, Democratic Representative from Penacook. And Representative Shirtliff, thank you for your time as well.
Good morning.
Well, and DJ, I'm going to start with you, since the Republicans were really driving the ship last year with 3-1 majorities, especially in your body. So, Representative Betancourt, how successful would you say you were in keeping that focus last year on the budget and the economy?
I think we were largely successful. Obviously, as you pointed out in your introduction, the budget was the biggest challenge that we faced without question, an unprecedented deficit of nearly $1 billion. It was $895 to $900 million that we had to close in the budget process. So we took an all-hands-on-deck approach. We also appreciated the fact that far too many Granite Staters are looking for work. So we tackled how do we make New Hampshire's business climate more attractive so that every Granite Stater who's looking for a job can find one. It was no easy task, but I think that we tackled it as best as we could and put New Hampshire on sound financial footing for the future. Also, as you pointed out, you know, House leaders made it a priority to make sure that we kept the focus on the economy and on job creation, which meant that we had to discipline our members to say, this issue may be important to you, but we have to make sure that we stay focused. We weren't perfect, but I think we did a darn good job.
And I want to bring you into the Senator Bradley, too. Again, how successful would you say the Senate was in keeping that focus on business and the budget?
I agree with DJ. I mean, jobs in the economy, jobs in the economy, jobs in the economy. And, you know, something that I think really didn't get talked about much last year because there was a lot of bipartisan cooperation on some very big issues.
Now, wait a minute. That's news to me because the words bipartisan cooperation were not part of the coverage last year.
Well, if you recall, Governor Lynch in his State of the State address or his budget address said we needed to reform Medicaid. Well, I had a bill reforming Medicaid that's in the process of being implemented now. Medicaid is the single largest cost item in state government, and it passed the Senate on a voice vote, 24 to nothing. We reformed business taxes so that business owners weren't subject to an income tax. Again, passed in the Senate on a voice vote, 24 to nothing. So while we had our disagreements about pensions, which had to be reformed, and the budget, I think that we also did a lot of bipartisan work that sort of went under the radar. And I think it's important, especially with my good friend Matt Hood here, that, you know, there's a shout out for the times that you can work in a bipartisan fashion that you do so.
Well, Senator Hood, let's hear from you then. Your assessment of how things went last year, especially in terms of the budget. And we'll get into other issues here in 2012 later. But I'd like to hear from you about last year and how your party felt it went.
Sure. I think we would not necessarily agree with the conclusion of Senator Bradley and DJ about Representative Betancourt, with respect to the success of the budget and the budget result. And specifically, Jeb mentioned managed Medicaid, and that's a large issue to tackle. And I think we're seeing that there are some difficulties with delays with implementation. And so if you rely on that as part of the answer to the budget hole, then that's a problem. It doesn't close the budget gap. And so it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Because the savings don't emerge immediately.
Because the savings don't emerge. The other pieces that I'd say with respect to the budget and jobs would be the actions that the majority took last year with respect to the budget, to me, raise a question about whether or not they in fact resulted in increased job creation, because we're looking at cuts to compensation for hospitals, for example, that resulted in hundreds of layoffs at some of the state's largest hospitals, reduction in the cigarette tax, which is creating a hole in the budget. So I think there are issues with the budget as it came out.
And again, we'll follow up on that in just a moment. But I also want to get you in on this, Representative Shurtleff, and maybe change the question a little bit. As DJ Betancourt said, the state faced an unprecedented budget deficit, you know, almost $900 million. What would Democrats have done differently, given the size of the deficit the state faced, and no more stimulus funds to fill the gaps like you had in 2009 and 2010? So clearly no one's happy when budgets get cut that deeply, but what might Democrats have done differently given the size of this deficit?
Well, I think we all realize that cuts needed to be made in the state budget. We're going through a tough economic time, and it continues. But I look at the recent UNH poll that said to the voters of New Hampshire, the number one and two concerns are the economy and jobs. But number three on that list is the Republican legislature. And I think voters feel that the Republican leadership, at least in the House, went off track. When we see tuitions going up for in-state students at UNH, but at the same time, the tobacco tax being cut by 10%, reducing our revenues by millions of dollars, then maybe we don't quite have our eye on what the real agenda of the public is. And I think those are the concerns. Another one is being the $30 surcharge on registrations. A lot of people did not like paying it, but we saw that that put in $90 million into a highway program. Besides creating jobs, it's repairing New Hampshire's infrastructure, which is so important to our business community.
So there were priorities, budget cuts that had to be made, but perhaps not in the way that they were made.
Absolutely.
Representative Betancourt, you want to jump into that a little bit there? That, you know, you had to cut, but did you have to go this far? There were revenue sources that maybe weren't so painful that you had to get rid of them.
Well, Laura, I think that you hit it on the head when you asked your question. What is the alternative? What are the solutions? And as far as I can tell, there are three solutions. There are reductions in government, which, while difficult, are necessary. There are raising taxes. And I don't think that that's the road we want to go down, particularly considering the economy, particularly considering the fact that we had had over 100 new or increased taxes and fees in the previous budget. Or you can tinker with revenue estimates. Now, I don't think that we want to talk about that. Certainly the Democrats don't, because our revenue estimates right now are pretty on the mark. But a couple of other things. You know, it's easy when difficult budget times come to point to certain things in society and say, well, that's unfortunate and that's unfortunate. We hear UNH come up all the time. But, of course, we don't talk about the fact that UNH has choices that they can make internally, too, that don't make tuition increases in inevitability. Most importantly, in talking about the $30 registration, that was a promise that the governor made in his previous budget. He said that the $30 registration surcharge would be a one-time event, and then it would go away. And so Republicans merely helped the governor keep his promise on that, because at the end of the day, it's important that our citizens have confidence that their elected officials will keep their promises.
Let's take some calls, gentlemen, and then so much to talk about. 1-800-892-6477 is our number. Our email exchange at nhpr.org. It's a roundtable of New Hampshire state lawmakers looking ahead at 2012, what some of the priorities will be. We've just wrapped up a little discussion on what happened in 2011. And as we look forward to the new year, let's hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. And gentlemen, let's go to Larry in Keene. Hi, Larry. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I teach at Keene State College, and in addition to the draconian cutbacks here in the lower morale, we're sort of in disbelief, most of us on campus, I would say, about guns on campus as a possibility. It just seems like a really crazy idea, but I want to ask you all about the economic implications. We rely on tuition from out of state to keep going. Will parents from Connecticut or Massachusetts keep sending their kids to Keene State College or UNH or Plymouth if they know that kids are carrying guns in the classroom?
Okay, Larry, thanks for calling in.
Okay.
Yeah, and do you want to address that, Senator Bradley?
Well, I think the Senate is going to take a hard and fast look at, I believe, it's House Bill 334. There are some major implications to that bill, not just guns on campuses, but how it affects venues like the Verizon Center or the Fisher Cat Stadium.
Sort of large public venues.
And also, it's one of those things that, as I look at it, given the legislature's sole authority over gun regulations on other people's property or universities, you might want to be a little bit careful about what you ask for. Legislatures can change. So I think there are a lot of questions that it will go to Senator Hood's committee, the Judiciary Committee, and we'll take a fresh look at it.
I see. Now, in the Senate, this is a little bit of a side issue, but in the Senate, Democrats do head committees? Because I know they used to.
Matt does.
You do.
In this case, yes, I chair the Judiciary Committee.
Because the Senate only has 24 people and there's a lot of work to do, and so.
Right. I was on the Judiciary Committee before. I'm an attorney. There are a lot of factors that I work collaboratively with my colleagues. There are a lot of factors.
Okay. And just to completely clarify then, Senator Bradley, so the House passed this bill, and the Senate is taking a look at it, but doesn't seem entirely on board.
Well, again, I mean, going back to your opening, what's the most important thing on people's minds right now? It's
okay.
Jobs and the economy. We're fortunate the unemployment rate in New Hampshire has gone down, but still, that's where our focus is.
All right. We will talk more after a short break. Thanks for that call. More of your calls in just a minute.
Good morning. It's 9:19, and support for NHPR comes from UR members and from the Dairy Field School, a college preparatory day school, inspiring bright, motivated young people since 1964, now accepting fall 2012 applications, dairyfield.org/visit. And the Keene Sentinel, the Monadnock region's local daily news source, online at sentinelsource.com. More of our roundtable with House and Senate leaders on the New Hampshire legislature in the new year on the exchange on NHPR, then at 10 on the Diane Rehm Show. It's the Friday News Roundup. New Hampshire weather, freezing rain advisory in effect for most of the state till around 11 this morning. Freezing rain advisory in effect for the North Country till 1 this afternoon. Also a wind advisory in effect for Hillsborough and Cheshire counties till midnight tonight. Today, cloudy, any scattered snow showers and freezing rain coming to an end. Highs around 35 North Country, 40 to 45 towards southern areas of the state. Temperatures will be falling during the afternoon. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're talking with leading New Hampshire lawmakers about the legislature in the new year, their priorities for 2012 after a tumultuous year in 2011. Give us a call. What do you think should be item number one for the legislature this year? What do you hope stays off the agenda? And overall, how do you hope this year unfolds at the State House in terms of policy and politics? Join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. Our members of the House of Representatives include DJ Betancourt, Republican House Majority Leader from Salem, and Stephen Shurtleff, Democrat from Penacook. On the Senate side, we have Jeb Bradley. He's Republican Senate Majority Leader from Wolfboro, and Matthew Hood, Wood, Democratic Senator from Plainfield. And gentlemen, before we go back to the phones, Steve Shurtleff, I did want to give you a chance to jump in on Larry's call. Larry, a teacher at Keene State College, worried about the possibility of allowing guns on campus.
Well, I think Larry brings up a good point. And there's aspects of 334 that we don't always hear about. We hear about Verizon Center. We hear about Fisher Cat Stadium. And we realize the negative impact on our college campuses. A few weeks ago, I had a phone call from Barry Conway, the commandant of the Veterans Home in Tilton. And under this bill, county nursing homes and the state veterans home must allow weapons on those premises. And Commandant Conway said to me, I've got a veteran here who was a Marine in World War II. Every morning when he wakes up, he thinks it's August of 1942, and he's about to go ashore again at Guadalcanal. He says, I don't want guns around this individual and our other residents who are somewhat confused now that they're in the senior part of their life. And that's a perfect example of why 334 is so bad. And it's my hope that the Senate will finally kill this bill.
Well, DJ Betancourt, I do need to give you a chance to jump in on this. This has caused a lot of controversy.
Sure. Well, I appreciate Senator Bradley's comments that they're going to take a very careful look at it. That particular piece of legislation was an open vote for our caucus. But I do want to say that generally speaking, the House has confidence in New Hampshire residents to be responsible firearm owners. We have one of the highest rates of firearm ownership here in New Hampshire, and yet we are still the safest, one of the safest at least, states in the country. So we have confidence in our citizens.
Well, and gentlemen, we've all been saying jobs in the economy was the focus last year, jobs in the economy will be the focus this year. But isn't it true, Senator Hood, that in the second year of the legislative session, it's often when non-economic bills get debated, like guns, like gay marriage, like other sort of more social issues and less having to do with finances?
Certainly that's been my experience.
I mean, that's typical, right?
It is. And I would say that in the first year, when you address the budget, obviously there's a tremendous amount of focus there. But it wouldn't be completely accurate to say that we didn't address social issues in the first year of the budget either. I mean, the first issue that was taken up, I believe, was guns in the State House. We certainly talked about funding for Planned Parenthood. Yes, it's financially related, but there are obviously policy implications about access to health care for women, primary and reproductive health care. So it's not at all surprising that we're going to see more in the second year. But I wouldn't say that we were without them in the first.
And is there a budget issue, Senator Bradley, to resolve in this second year? From what I understand, revenues aren't coming in as predicted. And so you guys are going to have to figure that out, too, this year, right? We're not out of the financial woods yet.
Well, we're certainly not out of the woods. I would say with regard to the hospital tax, we have received a letter from the Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services in Washington that had been in dispute, that with the receipt of that letter, we expect the revenues from the hospital tax to be on track. And that this hole that we have in the budget should be filled. All our other revenues are performing roughly what was anticipated, which is a good thing. And in fact, the business revenues are slightly up, which is, I think, an indication of the fact that the economy is starting to grow a little bit. The unemployment rate has come down to 5.2%. That's good news for our friends and neighbors who have had trouble finding jobs.
I see. So that hole in the budget caused by the hospital tax controversy will likely not be there anymore. So
yeah, and just if I can address that for a moment, too, what we did in the budget is say that if revenues came in a little bit better than expected, there was going to be the opportunity to return some of that money to the hospitals in the second year of the budget. So there's hope there for them, too.
All right. Lots of calls, gentlemen. Again, our number 1-800-892-6477. We're asking what you hope the New Hampshire legislature accomplishes in 2012. Our number 1-800-892-6477. Corey's calling from Concord. Hi, Corey. Thanks for hanging on. You're on the air.
Hi, Laura. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is that I know that the budgets for the courts and everything has been cut and everything, and I also know of people who unfortunately are in limbo because of paperwork not being sent out, their cases not being able to be heard, and everything such as people having to deal with like restraining orders and type of thing. But my question is there any way that there may be more money put into that so that the families aren't in limbo, they're not suffering, that the children aren't having to be in limbo, not knowing what's going on between mom and dad?
Okay, Corey, thanks a lot for calling in. And Representative Betancourt, I'll go to you first, and then maybe Steve Shurtleff.
Sure. I think it's important to know that the court system was one of the few areas in the budget that saw an increase in spending. The Supreme Court leadership came to us and said that if you can give us a little bit more money, we can implement a program that will move a lot of things online. We are becoming an online society. And in the long run, that's going to save the state considerable dollars. So we looked at their plan. We liked it. We thought that it achieved the goals that they were telling us it would achieve. So they saw an increase. No question about it. A lot of sacrifices asked across state government. But with particular focus on the courts, I think that that's important to note.
And Steve Shurtleff, I ask you this question, too, because you got a background in law enforcement as
I
well.
Do. There's an old saying that justice delayed is justice denied. And I think we're seeing this now. Former Justice Broderick and now Justice Delanus has made tremendous cuts in the court system in order to stay within their budgets. And when we see courthouses closed down and people not having access to the courts, it's unfair to our citizens who really need to seek justice.
Are people not having access to the courts, though? Well, Representative Betancourt said they got a decent amount of funding.
Well, if the funding is there, then I don't understand why the local courts are having to take cut down early, close early. There are reductions in time. There was a reduction in the number of judges that we have now as compared to a few years ago. So there are shortfalls in there. Budget, and I think it's something. This is something that needs to be addressed in a bipartisan manner. This isn't a Democrat or Republican issue. This is an issue of concern for all our citizens. It needs to be addressed as such.
Senator Bradley.
And I would just add that I am going to be introducing late legislation that hopefully will take some of the cases out of the court system, medical liability cases, with a voluntary settlement mechanism that is very innovative in its approach. It will be voluntary, but this hopefully will get some cases out of the court, and that will address some of those issues. So I look forward to having your support.
Absolutely.
Okay. And go ahead, Senator Hood.
Thank you. The one thing that I would add is the courts have done a tremendous amount of innovative work in response to the tightening of the budget, and they should be applauded for that. One of the things that I think the legislature can do is not hamstring them further by things like doing away with marital masters or limiting the age range that a judge can serve, which is one of the proposals that I think has been introduced in the House this year. If a judge has to retire when they're 70, but they can't serve until they're 60, you're shrinking the window and making it pretty hard to have access to justice then.
All right. Thank you for that call, Corey. And our number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Here's a question that I asked a minute ago, but I think I'll ask you again, Senator Hood, and maybe Steve Shurtleff can jump in too. So we've heard from two callers already who were upset about budget cuts. I asked you this earlier, and you mentioned the cigarette tax, which didn't need to be lowered by 10%, you said, and also the motor vehicle registration, $30 motor vehicle registration fee, which you felt should have stayed in place. That money goes to roads, right, though, that motor vehicle fee. So my question is this, and I'm not picking on you, but, you know, where else would you have found the money to fund some of these things that you felt should have been funded? The cigarette tax, you know, if you'd kept the 10 cents, okay, I'm not sure how much that would raise, but it's not millions and millions of dollars. So my question again to you, and maybe Steve Shurtleff too, is where would you have found the money to fund these priorities, the courts, the universities, and so forth?
It's a great question, and it's the constant dilemma that we face, which is if you only look at one side of the ledger, and in this case, the majority looked at one side of the ledger, cutting, you're never going to have a conversation about what other sources of revenue are available. I haven't ever come out and said, you know, we need to pursue this revenue source. We need to pursue this tax. But we certainly need to have a conversation about what those revenue sources would be. So for me to answer your question, I'd need to at least have a conversation with my colleagues about what that might be. And we haven't had that.
So you're saying there was a philosophical approach right at the beginning that we're not even talking about revenues. We're only talking about cuts.
I would agree with that. That's completely accurate.
Representative Betancourt, and then Steve Shurtleff,
I
promise
to you. Is it fair to ask what revenues? What revenues would you look at? What taxes would you raise, implement? What fees would you raise or implement?
I think it's a completely fair question. And, it's interesting. During the campaign last cycle, there was discussion about the number of fee and tax increases, and the number started out at 80 and now it's up over 100. I can never get my hands around that number. I've never seen a piece of paper with what they were. But that being said, let's go back and look at some of those. What were they that were repealed? And so let's, rather than in a time of fiscal difficulty, taking money off the table, even, Laura, if it's $13 million or whatever it is that the cigarette tax looks to be in the decline or behind, that's a start. That funds something. And so we shouldn't take any of those off the table, in my opinion.
Representative Shurtleff, and then back to our callers.
Well, there's a reason I serve on the Criminal Justice Committee and not the Finance Committee. I, who struggle to balance my checkbook. Matt said it was $13 million. I had $14 million we lost through the tax that was reduced on tobacco products. I think that this the legislature, and again, this is something that needs to be addressed in a bipartisan manner. The Republican leadership was adamant that we would not look at any adjustments or any increases. And I think we just can't shut down, especially in these tough economic times, to look to see if is everybody paying their fair share. We know the property taxpayers are paying their fair share and then some. But I think we need to look at others and not eliminate. We had a bill this session that increased the training fee for those that, out of state, who want to get their motorcycle license. We had to go back in and amend that bill on the floor and change the word fee to tuition because they were so adamant they would not increase the fee. We've got to get more serious about this.
Let's take another call. This is Wayne in Dover. Hi, Wayne. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey there. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. Go ahead, Wayne.
I have a question about the hospitals being in such dire straits. Everywhere I go, I see new hospitals being built. I see CEOs in various departments with six-figure incomes, and yet they're crying poor boy. It just doesn't really compute to the average on the street.
So you're saying in terms of the Medicaid cut to the hospitals, Wayne, that sounds all right. They've got the money to spare?
Yeah, I mean, how can they possibly be building all these brand-new facilities, having people with six-figure incomes at the top for a nonprofit organization? I mean, it's not exactly like they've got to advertise to... Well, I guess they do advertise, but I mean, if you're sick, you've got to go to a hospital.
Right. Wayne, thanks a lot for calling in. What do you think, Senator Bradley?
Well, I think he brings up a valid point, and I think it also needs to be noted that, you know, hospitals are almost exclusively in New Hampshire not-for-profit, and over the years have bought a number of physician practices and brought those practices under the not-for-profit umbrella that formerly had paid taxes. So, you know, this is something that, you know, there's always a push and a pull when a tax policy gets changed. There's no question that several hundred people have lost jobs in New Hampshire as a result of, you know, the hospital layoffs. At the same time, when you look at the unemployment figures in New Hampshire, that category of health services has increased in terms of the unemployment number. And I go back to, you know, the fact that, as I've stressed already a couple of times here, why is it that New Hampshire has one of the lowest unemployment rates in the country? Well, it's because we don't overtax people. And you know, when DJ and I became the majority leaders in the Senate and the House, there had been, whether it's 85 or 95 tax and fee hikes, those were real, including the LLC tax, a campground tax that had been repealed, and a number of other tax and fee increases. And when we talk about the cigarette tax, a lot of the loss in revenue from the cigarette tax is not just from the decline in the tax, but people are smoking less. And so that would have happened anyway with regard to the cigarette tax. I think it's very important that we maintain the competitive advantage that New Hampshire has tax-wise. That's why we have a 5.2% unemployment rate, high as that is. We don't want to be 9.9%, which South Carolina is, where all the attention in the world is now focused. Let's, you know, remember those lessons that New Hampshire's tax advantage is an advantage.
Well, and Senator Hood, could we talk about Wayne's point? I mean, Democrats have said, look, this Republican budget destroyed jobs. Look at all the hospitals that are laying people off because of the cut in Medicaid to hospitals. But, you know, independent analysts have pointed out that hospitals had other choices. They didn't have to lay off hundreds or dozens of people because of this Medicaid cut. Medicaid, about 10% of their overall revenue. So it's been pointed out they do have other choices that they could have made.
I think yes and no would be my answer to that. I mean, I think that you have hospitals the caller's point was right on. If you're sick, you have to go to the hospital. Exactly. Hospitals can't turn away people. They can't say we're not going to provide you with care. When they have the volumes that they do of what we call uncompensated care, of care that they're providing to people who don't have insurance or care that they're providing to people under the Medicaid or Medicare programs, which is not reimbursing hospitals or physicians for dollar for dollar for the value of the services they're providing, I think you start losing flexibility with respect to what hospitals' options are. Right now, there's a suit in federal court as a result of the state's decision. And what it really comes down to is access. The caller said you have to go to a hospital. A choice is to say, we're not going to take more Medicaid patients. We're not going to take more Medicare patients. That's not a choice that nonprofit hospitals either want to or choose to make.
All right. Well, and that's an issue we've covered a lot on this program, and I'm thinking, gentlemen, we'll be covering it again in 2012. So I'll leave it at that for now. Thanks for that call. Let's take Julie waiting in Deerfield. Julie, thanks for hanging on. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, Laura. Thanks for taking my call. I guess this question is really from my daughter. This summer, my partner and I, 29 years, were married in a gay marriage with my son and daughter there, and as well as friends and family from Deerfield. And this morning, as I dropped her off to school, she looked at me when she heard what was going to be on NPR and goes, Mom, why are they even considering this with everything else that is going on, besides considering it at all about repealing the gay marriage? So I told her, you have to ask them. And so I figured, well, she's at school, I'll ask.
All right,
why are
Julie.
They even considering this?
Okay, Julie, thanks a lot for calling in. And DJ Betancourt, that's for you. This has come up in the House, or it will come up in the House, right? What's the schedule?
It will come up in the House. We've got some important economic things we have to take care of, and then we will take that issue up after. I think it's important to note that I made the decision very early on in the session that we were going to hold off on that issue until this year. We were going to hold off until, and it's one of those issues that I referenced at the beginning of the show about making sure that we disciplined our members to keep their eye focused on the ball, which is the economy and job creation. So it will come up at the appropriate time, but we've got some important fiscal issues that we're focused on first.
And why do this then? I mean, here's the law. It's been in place for, I don't know, 3 or 4 years. Why repeal it?
Well, every legislator has the ability to put in a piece of legislation. So this was important to a group of legislators. They put the legislation in, and it's working its way through the legislative process.
Mm-hmm. And what are the implications of this, Senator Bradley, if this debate comes up and it is repealed?
Well, I think first we have to see what the House does, and then the Senate, you know, will consider it. There will be a number of criteria that, you know, we'll look at how does it impact civil unions and the like. And then move on from there.
Is there an economic impact, Representative Shurtleff, to repealing gay marriage?
I think there is. It may not be overwhelming, but there is an impact on the state. And, you know, I must say I'm a Roman Catholic, member of the Knights of Columbus, and I know what my church says about same-sex marriage, but I totally disagree with the church, and that troubles me. But I don't see how we could deny two people that love each other the same rights that we all have.
All right, Julie, thanks a lot for calling in. More of your calls after a very short break. We'll take your emails to exchange@nhpr.org or call 1-800-892-6477.
Folk legend Peter Yarrow put the Peter in Peter, Paul, and Mary.
Light one candle for the Maccabee children, with thanks that their light didn't die.
I'm Kate McNally. Join me for the next Tupelo Public Radio Project. I'll speak with Yarrow live on stage at the Tupelo Music Hall in White River Junction tonight at 8, and during the folk show on Sunday. For tickets and information, visit the folk show page at nhpr.org.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and Capital Center for the Arts in Concord, presenting Everett Dance Theater's Brainstorm, a multimedia dance theater experience that provokes thought, January 28th at 8, ccanh.com. And New Hampshire Magazine, exploring the competitive realm of cross-country skiing, plus the work of sculptor Emil Birch, New Hampshire Magazine, where New Hampshire comes to you. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, a New Hampshire legislative roundtable. We've been reviewing what happened in the legislature last year and looking ahead to the legislature in the new year. What's in store for 2012? Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. What would you put on the legislative agenda this year, and what would you keep off? Our number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. We have two members of the House and two members of the Senate with us. From the Senate is Jeb Bradley, Republican Majority Leader from Wolfboro, and Matthew Hood from Plainfield. He's a Democrat. On the House side, we have DJ Betancourt, Republican House Majority Leader from Salem, and Steve Shurtleff, Democratic Representative from Penacook. Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. And DJ Betancourt, as we look ahead at 2012, I understand just from reading the headlines that there's an issue that's going to come back from 2011, and that's voter ID. There was a big kerfluffle about this week. What happened?
Well, what happened is that there was an organization that proved, in my opinion, what we have been saying for many, many years about the need for voter identification. The individuals came into the polling place. They were aware that the individual who was on the voter roll was no longer living, and they said that they were that person, and the clerk went to give them a ballot, but before they could accept the ballot, the individual said, just to let you know, we're not that person, but you would have given me a ballot without a valid ID.
So they didn't vote, actually.
They did not vote. They did not vote. But for years, the opposition, the Democrats and the League of Women Voters and others said that photo ID legislation was racist. They said it was intended to suppress the vote. And now we're seeing, in fact, that it's a necessity to ensure against election fraud.
What do you think, Matthew Hood? I want to turn to you on this. This is going to come up again. It came up last year. The governor vetoed it, and I think that veto was sustained, correct?
Yes, there's no
voter ID law on the books right now. Okay.
It is likely to see something again come in the House.
Right. Someone said they're going to file a bill.
I guess I clearly disagree. I think it's a solution in search of a problem. I think this this incident, and I someone with too much time on their hands breaking the law, I mean obtaining a ballot, and so hopefully the Department of Justice will look into this and the Attorney, Secretary of State's office will look into it. I mean, I think the Secretary of State has consistently said there's not an issue with voter fraud in New Hampshire.
And I think the situation establishes that there is that potential. We have to ensure the integrity of our democratic process. We're special here in New Hampshire. We have the New Hampshire primary. It's important that we make sure that those individuals who are voting are legally able to vote. I'm very troubled by the fact that it appears as though we're going to shoot the messenger. Instead of realizing that there's a problem here that needs to be addressed, we're going to attack the process and we're going to question the motives of the individuals who exposed the problem. I find that very troubling.
Is there any question in your mind, Representative Betancourt, about the way people did this, you know, sort of trying to vote illegally, filming stuff undercover? Does that trouble you at all?
Well, first of all, the individuals in the polling place are public officials. We have laws in the books that allow you to film public officials in their duty. So that doesn't trouble me, no.
And Representative Bradley, I'd like to hear from you on this. Voter ID, a big priority in the Senate or not?
I think it's a priority in the Senate. And I think that we need to work with local election officials to make sure that it's implemented in the most effective way possible so that it doesn't create long lines. But, you know, if you look at polling, 80% of Americans think that voter ID is a good idea. You have to use an ID for all sorts of things today. I don't think one of our most sacred rights should be diminished by not having an ID. And I think that as we move through the education process, which will take some time, the public in New Hampshire is going to accept it and embrace it as we have it. Now, I'd also like to talk about what I think is our top agenda item for 2012, and that's passage of a constitutional amendment on education funding that will finally give voters in this state a chance to weigh in on how we fund education. I talked previously about Medicaid being the single largest cost item in the budget. Well, ed funding, the state portion of it, is the second largest. If there's ever an opportunity for the stars to be aligned with Governor Lynch's support for a constitutional amendment, and I think the leadership in the House and the Senate leadership and the members, we have to agree on the 40 or so words, and there are only about four or five words that there is dispute about. We need to at least put it on the ballot and give our constituents and voters across the state a chance to weigh in. And in my view, we're going to end up with an income tax and maybe a sales tax sooner rather than later if we don't get our hand around a formula that is, quite frankly, irrational in many instances, where high-income towns are getting a lot of money and towns like Berlin and northern New Hampshire are losing money. And so we need to address that. And the way to do that is through a constitutional amendment that allows targeting of educational aid. And I go back, because I've been a lifer in the State House, to when Senator, now Senator Shaheen, was governor. This is exactly what she proposed in her ABC-type program. We need to have an amendment to allow that. It's high time to do it.
Didn't the ABC program include a sales tax, though, to partly fund it?
She proposed a sales tax in 2002. The ABC program was proposed, I believe it was in 1998.
I see.
Right after the Claremont decision, which came out in 97.
So big priority for you, education funding amendment. And as you know, Senator Bradley, we've done dozens and dozens and dozens of programs on this. And I wonder, and I'll ask the other members of the panel, maybe you, Representative Shurtleff, you know, everybody keeps saying this is the year, it's going to happen. Governor Lynch wants it. The Republicans want it. But it always flunks, pardon the analogy. But you know, is this even a remote possibility this year? What do you think? An education funding amendment where everybody coming together on this.
Well, I think the possibility of passage is there with the numbers that we're looking at in both bodies, but I think the governor will veto it. I don't think it's the right time for New Hampshire. And just get back for 1 second to this last photo ID thing. I think a lot of times people in New Hampshire say, well, when the Democrats say up, the Republicans will say down, and vice versa. And I think in this controversy, if one looks at the words of Joan Flood Ashwell from the League of Women Voters, who said that the actions by these individuals were, she called them out-of-state con artists, and that we don't have a problem with election laws in the state of New Hampshire. And to quote a lady from Nashua this morning, Mrs. Della Rose, whose brother's ID was used by one of these individuals, she found it deplorable, and I agree. And
distasteful to use a dead
person's
ID. Yes,
and my sympathy goes out to those families whose loved ones were used in this manner.
All right. Well, all I can say on this election law thing is we'll have to do another program. I'm going to leave it for now. Matthew Hood, what about education funding? I remember going through some scripts from last year saying 2011 is the year that the legislature and the governor are going to reach agreement on a constitutional amendment, and it didn't happen.
Well, I think it's all going to come down to what does it say. And so the issue is, what role does the court have in the New Hampshire Supreme Court have, if any, in reviewing the acts of the legislature with respect to school funding? And then if it's complete discretion to the legislature with respect to determining what an adequate education is and funding it without any oversight role, I think that's going to be problematic for Democrats and others. Governor Lynch included. And so it really will depend upon what type of language goes in, as Senator Bradley had suggested.
Quick thought from you, DJ Betancourt, and then back to our callers.
Sure, there's an important academic point here, which is that the governor's not involved in constitutional amendments. It takes 3/5 of the House, 3/5 of the Senate, and then it goes to our constituents for their ratification. What is important to us, of course, is that we are able to get Governor Lynch's support.
It's the bully pulpit thing.
Absolutely. And we do want to work together. I reiterate what Jeb said, but I also appreciate the fact that he's right, that what it is for us right now, I think, is a matter of wording. But we are on record, and I think that this should be noted as well, that the House, for the first time in nearly 100 attempts, passed a constitutional amendment this session. So we've taken a step in the positive direction. I'm sure that in the coming months there will be many talks between Senator Bradley and myself and the governor and others involved in this, and we are committed to getting something done on this.
All right, let's take another call. And Dan's been waiting in Concord. Hi, Dan. Thanks for hanging on. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello, guys. I moved to New Hampshire from Vermont 6 years ago. I'm a public school teacher. I consider myself politically independent, and I was looking forward to moving to the great state of New Hampshire and for a little independence. I am going to be moving back to Vermont, if at all possible, I believe, because I think that the radical right-wing agenda that's come out of the State House in the past couple years is insane. The anti- anti-education, or as I like to call it, the anti-intelligence legislation that's come across. They're trying to repeal gay marriage. I mean, on the one hand, they tout, you know, personal liberty with all their pro-gun stuff, and I understand that. I'm a hunter and I'm a gun owner, but how can you be for one personal liberty and so decidedly against others, like a woman's right to choose and have an abortion or gay marriage? Or it's driving me out of the state.
So the conservative agenda is a little too much for you, Dan.
A little too far to the right.
All right. Well, thanks for calling in. DJ Betancourt, I'm going to throw that one to you.
Sure. Well, the caller referenced the past couple of years. In fact, Senator Bradley and I have only been in leadership this past year. So, but let me say, you know, let's be clear about where our focus is. And I'm going to use two bills that were passed just this week. You know, we increased the net operating loss carry forward under the BPT from $1 million to $10 million.
Business which is, profits tax.
That's right, where most states are. Additionally, we passed a piece of legislation that made it easier for our small businesses to fill out the appropriate forms with the DRA. So it makes their cost of doing business a little bit lower. Additionally, as we look forward, I'm working with Senator Bradley on a great piece of legislation for our LLCs in this state. We're also going to approach tort reform. Those are pieces of legislation that may not be as exciting as gay marriage, guns, and abortion, but it's the kind of in-the-trenches policy-making decisions that we're focused on and have been focused on that are going to improve our economy and going to put our citizens back to work. That's our focus.
So is that an unfair criticism that you guys have had a radical right-wing agenda and you're swinging the state too far and he wants to go back to Vermont?
Well, it's merely a matter of his opinion. We're certainly sad to lose him as a citizen if that's the case. But again, every one of the 400 members of the legislature can file a piece of legislation and it will work its way through the legislative process. And it's a good process. Does it have its headaches? Sure. Does it drive me crazy on some days? Sure. But there's a stark contrast between our system, which lets any legislator freely file a piece of legislation and have an up or down vote on the floor, as opposed to the system in Washington, which Senator Bradley, I'm sure, is very familiar with, where bills can disappear, favorite interests get priority, and bills don't have an up or down vote on the floor. Our system in New Hampshire is an open and ethical process, whereas the one in Washington, I think, as we can all appreciate, is broken.
Because every bill gets a hearing in the House,
absolutely,
no matter what. And, you know, Representative Shurtleff, I'm guessing you probably agree with our caller, Dan, but here's the flip side. When Democrats were in charge, Republicans said that Democrats were not focused on job and the economy, that you guys were focused on fringe issues like transgender rights, or there was a ban on Mylar balloons or something like that. So you hear this no matter who's in charge.
Well, that ban on Mylar balloons was brought by a Republican member of the House. So that was a bipartisan as a prime sponsor. So we have no ownership of that legislation. But I do know what Dan is talking about. And I think we saw it in our first couple of sessions, the bills that came before us. It's one thing if a member of the House introduces legislation, but when Republican leadership gets behind it and supports it, then it takes on a different connotation. We saw the bill 446 that would do away with licensing for our beauticians, court reporters, landscape architects, massage therapists, and others. We saw House Bill 160 that would raise interest rates on payday loans to 403% annual percentage rate. That's outrageous. And this is what the people of New Hampshire are seeing, and this is the reality before them.
How much do you think, Representative Shurtleff, the media picks up on these wackier bills and kind of highlights them because they're more fun to report on than, you know, and pardon me for not remembering the exact details of what you said, Representative Bennett Corton, but, you know, changing the business profits tax. It's a little less sexy.
Well, that's true. But I think, you know, a lot of times we in the House wonder if a lot of this stuff is an inside baseball and it's just us that is noticing it. But when I look at the letters to the editor and I see editorials from the Concord Monitor or the Portsmouth Herald saying that this legislature is off kilter with some of this legislation that they're supporting, we know there's a problem.
Peter Bragdon, the president of the Senate, where you are, has said, we are not sexy this year.
And that's what I've said, too. I mean, we've worked under the radar in a lot of instances on legislation. As I said in the opening, some very, very big pieces of legislation were very bipartisan that passed the Senate on a 24-0 vote, reforming Medicaid, reforming business taxes. So I think, you know, I'm going to play Newt Gingrich here for a little bit and talk about how the media does blow things up, because that's exactly what they do with some of these hot button issues. And you know, through the 24-hour news cycle and the internet and things like that, they overwhelm all of the other things that happen. And DJ's exactly right. The agenda is set by 424 members of the legislature, unlike in Washington, which I remember altogether too well, where it's committee chair or the leadership that bottles bills up and they never see the light of day. Every bill has a hearing. Every bill has to have an up or down vote on the House or the Senate floor. And so because of that, and because of the 24-hour news cycle, I think you see just an awful lot of inflammatory rhetoric that masks some of the important work that's getting done.
And real quick, to you, Representative Betancourt, and then Senator Hood, and then we're out of time.
And that's absolutely right. Senator Bradley is absolutely right. I mentioned two bills that we took up this week that substantially helped job creation in the state. They weren't reported anywhere. And so I think that there is a great misconception in the public about what the focus of the legislature is. We're focused on jobs. But because they're not sexy, because they're down in the trenches in its minutia that's important to job creation, but not something that's going to have somebody running out to the mailbox to read about, the people get the misconception of the focus. But, you know, let's face it. Members of both parties sometimes get off track. Democrats sponsored a bill for D.C. statehood. I'm not sure how that's a focus for this legislature. Another bill would exhume Meriwether Lewis. So let's be clear about focus here. We're focused on jobs in this economy.
And Senator Hood, we haven't heard from you in a moment. Do you want to list maybe two priorities for Democrats this year? Senator Bradley listed some of his priorities, education, funding.
Yeah, well, certainly I think the Democrats continue to be focused on the economic issues and jobs for people. And the bill that I'd reference is SB 337, which would enhance New Hampshire Working Program. To return to work, use unemployment dollars.
Right,
to
that
fund
was a Governor Lynch program a year or two ago.
And the other thing is, a previous caller, Julie, I think it was, said she got married recently. I'd like to offer my congratulations to her on her wedding and certainly make it one of my priorities to make sure that we don't repeal same-sex marriage.
Well, and gentlemen, I hope I see y'all again this year. This has been real interesting, lots of stuff we could have covered. We didn't have time. Thank you so much all for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Laura.
Thank you.
Again, our senators were Jeb Bradley from Wolfboro, a Republican, and Matthew Hood from Plainfield, a Democrat. On the House side, we had DJ Betancourt, Majority Leader from Salem, and Steve Shirtliff, a Democrat from Pennacook. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Canoy.